Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the show. Today is Friday, July 6th, and we just had 2 days before the holiday and the weekend.
Right.
And now we get another 2 days. Very hot friggin' days, I might add.
Yeah, the outside is really, really something.
For the record, folks, well, you know, I think the whole country is pretty much sweltering right now.
Yeah, my sister said it was hot in Boston, too.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you see, these people probably don't have air conditioning or anything. They die, right?
I would imagine, or they need to go to Home Depot and at least get 12 fans.
Yeah, but you know what? Fans with 112 degrees
doesn't do anything.
No.
No.
It's not a lot of fun, let me tell you.
No, it's not.
So, so the summer's officially starting now, I guess, right?
Yep.
So that's that. How's your dog doing?
Oh, my God.
Your foster dog?
Yeah, I cried all the way here.
Why?
Because I only have him for like
two more days?
A day and a half.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
I feel like I have to go with my gut. I don't think the foster mom before me, who is adopting him, is trustworthy.
Really?
Yeah,
then maybe you should report her.
I did. I've been trying. Every day I'm like trying to throw some more shade at the adoption.
But are you doing this at your own interest?
No.
I mean, come on.
Because
you'll get it after.
First of all, how do you, one, have a dog for 2 months and he smells the way he smelled when you dropped him off to me? Two, his paws were pussing. His skin was bleeding. He had gouges on both sides of his face and
his
chin.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I called them and I go, hey, when's the last time you went to the vet?
Right.
And then I take him to the vet. He's on 6 antibiotics, and he looks like a brand new dog.
Yeah.
But now you're going to go back to where I just got you from.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
I've been really
stressed.
See,
I don't know why
that.
You even get yourself involved in this in the first place.
I don't know. Let's
just
not
forget
about it. I will cry.
Yeah, I mean, what is it? Like adopting a baby and then giving it back, you know?
I know.
You don't need that, you know? Yeah. Either get something permanent or don't get anything at all. Because you get attached. I mean, why would you do this? You get attached to the person. And then you're like...
Yeah, and then you got to say bye.
Yeah,
and he's
person
gonna be confused,
or dog or whatever.
And he's going to think I didn't love him.
Right.
Horrible.
Yeah.
I probably won't foster another dog, to be honest with you.
Good, good. Not a good idea.
Yeah, like it makes me feel good like babysitting dogs, and then I know they're going back to like their loving parents who cared enough to get them babysitters while they were on vacation. Fostering, it's like you just don't know what's going to happen to them.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so, I mean, if I can keep them, I'm going to keep them.
Really?
110%.
Oh, wow.
And, like, she's getting her apartment checked on Saturday. I'm praying, like, I prayed to God that she would fail. I'm hoping her carpet's dirty, like.
Okay.
Like, I want her to fail so I can keep them.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see. The story continues.
Yep.
And we'll see what happens with that, right?
I did my second Skype for this show last night. They called me back for another Skype.
Ah,
which
nice.
I guess is a good thing,
it
right?
is a good sign, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have at least initial interest in you. That's good, too.
Yeah.
Well, very happy for you. I'd like to see you get busy.
You say him, but I'd be gone for a month. What would you do for a whole month
really?
Without me?
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Where would you go? Oh, they put you like in a secluded place, mm-hmm. like isolated where you
They
can't.
Asked me if I had a passport, so I'm assuming somewhere out of the country.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which kind of freaks me out.
Yeah.
But I'm going if they call, for sure.
Well, I don't know. We'll deal with it when we get there, right?
I have
right?
to actually get approved first. I swore a lot in my interview last night, so maybe I was shit-faced.
Really?
Yeah.
Great.
I drank by myself.
A drunk interview.
Well, I switched my internet yesterday from AT&T to Spectrum, and the guy showed up at 12:30 and left my house at 7. I go, you shouldn't be working for this company.
What?
Like 7 hours in my apartment.
Maybe he just wanted to be there in your company.
No, I mean... He was really cute, but he didn't know what
he was doing. Yeah. Obviously.
He had to call somebody else to come in and like help him, and the guy figured it out in like 20 minutes. And I was like,
but that's after 6 hours of
being 6 hours, yeah. Because I was like, you need to get somebody else here. I was trying not to be a bitch, but I was drinking like half a bottle of wine while I was here and like trying to make sure he wasn't like trying to rape me at the same time. Like, what are you still doing here?
Whoa.
Yeah. I like walked a dog, came back. Walked the dog again, came back. That's how long he was at
Maybe call a supervisor. Find out if that's like standard procedure.
Well, he told me he's been on the job for a week. I was like, that would happen only to me. honestly.
Yeah. But, oh, well.
But now it works.
You'll have faster internet.
It's so fast.
Right?
Yeah, so fast. Spectrum? Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Good. Good yeah. for you. Now you can download your porn a lot faster.
Yeah, exactly. Weekends are already lined up and planned with that.
Oh, wow. So I can't imagine what I'm going to be doing this weekend in the heat, but probably hang around the beach area, the coast, you know.
Why would you go to the beach when it's 100 degrees out?
Well, I'm not going to lie on the beach, but I'm maybe spend my time in the area, you know, like down South Bay, Orange County, go in the car, you know. It's not as hot near the beach, although they're saying it is going to get
yeah,
pretty,
I was like, it's
like
it's
in
like,
the 90s still, but
yeah.
But 90s is bearable. When you get to 110, man.
No. I like going to the beach when it's like 77.
Yeah.
That's like perfect.
Well, so does everybody else, and then there's no parking.
Yeah, right. Unless you live there and you got a beach house. Yeah. And I don't know anyone who has a beach house, unfortunately. I'd always go.
Yeah.
Yeah, sucks.
Well, beach houses are very expensive.
Yeah. Even to rent them out, is it, if you Airbnb one, it's still
probably,
expensive
yeah.
too.
I can imagine, yeah. I mean, these houses are like, you know, what? Probably $20, $30 million. The ones that are like on the Strand and Manhattan Beach and mm-hmm. stuff, you know, right?
Right.
I mean, it's like unbelievable what's going on. In a couple of minutes, we're going to bring on our guest right now. We have another author with, I think it's going to be an amazing show because we're dealing with science and history and all that stuff. And we won't bore you. I know it's not your cup of tea. But
are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, you're looking at me like, hey, don't fall asleep.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at you like. I promise you, you won't, okay?
No.
You won't.
We always have a good show.
Of course. It's always fascinating, you know? And it's always, you know, it's when Desiree brings in the guests, you know, it's going to be cool.
Right.
And what I appreciate is that she gives the time to be with her clients, you know,
right.
And she comes here, you actually participate. So I'm talking to Desiree, who is the publicist of the guest, and welcome
thank
back.
Thank you, Sam.
Of course, and the reason I'm bringing you on first is because I remember that yesterday we didn't promote you, we didn't give you a plug.
That's
because
okay.
we ran out of time.
I'm here to promote the authors.
I know.
It's not about
me. Well, but
Black
you're
show,
here too,
Chateau.
You know.
Oh,
you
thank
gotta,
you for the show.
Yeah, always have to promote, you know.
Thank you.
Always be promoting.
You're so thoughtful.
Yeah.
I love that. You
thank
both
you.
Are.
And she's already analyzed my personality. She mm-hmm. knows what I like, mm-hmm. what I don't like.
I know how to hit your buttons.
I know. Wow. I got to be careful there, you know, not to expose so much. So, Desiree, you brought us Mark Rose this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about him from your perspective as an author. What do you think of him?
I dig Mark because he is a scientist.
Really?
And I love sci-fi, fantasy, genre fiction, basically.
Right.
And when you have somebody that really knows and understands the nuances, that comes out in the writing. And I think that's
right.
really cool.
And that's nice because you have a lot of different clients and authors and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You're obviously totally into books and stuff. When did you start your public relation company or publicity, whatever you call what you do?
I started technically about 3 years ago is when I got the name and I started planning. At the time, I was working as the vice president of a digital marketing agency.
Oh, okay.
And I was
cool.
kind of, you know, doing it on the side, planning
right.
my escape. And, yeah.
Oh, damn.
She always knew you wanted to do this, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, she also wrote a book and you've been here before with your book. Under your fictional name, is that mm-hmm. what
my,
they call
yeah,
it?
Sure, my nom de plume or alias.
Yeah. What? Yeah. Okay. You see, she knows a lot of French.
Is that French?
Yeah.
I have no clue.
Nom de plume.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day.
There you go. Very cool. So tell people how they can find you, and then we're going to get to Mark and start delving into the books and into him as well. If someone wants aspiring author. I mean, do you take on new authors too, or just experienced ones? How does it go?
Either or. I even can do book development and help you with your editing process. So if you're in the beginning stages, I can help with that.
Yeah.
Obviously doing PR and marketing and for personality brands too. So people who might be using their book as a calling card, a lot of times you have that with business, thought leaders,
that's
people
true.
Of that nature. So, yeah. I'm easy to find. I'm blackchateauenterprises.com. And you can also find Black Chateau on Instagram, Facebook, and I'm on Twitter. And just look up either Black Chateau or Desiree Duffy.
There you go. You know, and we'll have you back as the author again.
Okay.
And we'll go, because how many books have you written?
I've written several, but one is published. I'm right. working on one right now, and I'm
really?
A little over the halfway mark, which I'm really excited about.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to that, okay. Desiree. Well, Desiree, thank you so much. And now we're going to get into our guest, whom Desiree brought so kindly here on a Friday. I love Fridays, so you hear Mark on a good day. Welcome to the show, Mark Rose, an author... and are you a scientist too? I mean, do you consider yourself
as a scientist?
Really?
Yes.
What do you do?
The real deal. I work for a company that is working to cure a disease called Huntington's disease.
Yeah,
that's before lymphoma, right? Or is it a strand of lymphoma?
No, it's not. It's like one of the, you've heard of Alzheimer's disease, right?
Right.
Parkinson's disease.
Yeah.
And so it's the third disease on the
oh, really? Like under dementia and stuff,
yeah,
right?
Dementia.
Yeah, my dad died of Parkinson's, so I kind of get familiar with looking at someone who's going through that. So you guys are, what, researching that, looking for cures?
Yeah, I work. It's a research foundation because Huntington's is it's an orphan disease, meaning that there's not enough people for larger companies to put a lot of money into it because it wouldn't be profitable.
Right.
And so what has to happen is smaller companies and foundations appear from people who are willing to donate money.
Right.
And we have some very financially well-off donors, and they support a foundation, and they give money for people all around the world to try to cure Huntington's.
Wow.
So what exactly is Huntington's, if you had to, like, give a definition for it?
Well, it's a part of your brain, or a big part of your brain, actually starts to, your neurons start to disappear over time. So you start to lose your mental faculties. First, you start to experience like psychosis kinds of things, and then you lose the ability to control your body
motor movements.
Oh my god! Oh my goodness!
So it's a genetic disease. So
right.
if your mother or father has it, you have a 50-50 chance of getting it. And it's not like Alzheimer's, where you know you have a parent who has Alzheimer's, but it was kind of late, and you don't. You're not really sure you're going to get it, and that's the case.
Right.
Alzheimer's, you have, or Huntington's, you have a 50-50 chance.
Wow. So that's almost like a sure thing.
Right.
Now, so, I mean, if someone knew they had it, they probably should not have kids.
Well, that's a decision people have to make.
Right.
Since there's no cure, what you find is, I think it's 90%, but I can't be quoted on that, 90% of people don't get tested. And there's a test for it to show whether or not you have the gene.
Really?
Yeah, because Jeez. People don't want to know that. And it really is it winds up being a death sentence sometimes in your 40s and 50s.
Right, yeah. And this is interesting because I sent my sample to 23andMe, which do your DNA and ancestry.
I don't
and
like
stuff.
Websites like that, but continue.
But... no, I wanted to find my ancestry, like where my parents came from and all that stuff.
Right.
But I also, since my dad had Parkinson's, I did the health part of it too. And people said, do you really want to know that you'll have Parkinson's? I said, yeah, I kind of do, you know. So if I do have it, because otherwise every day I'm going to think, oh, my hand is shaking a little bit. I have Parkinson's. And I started being like that.
Right.
So because my grandfather had it, my dad had it, I thought, well, maybe it does have some genetics in it. So when I finally got it, it said negative. They didn't find the gene in me. I thought, oh, my God, thank you. So it helped, you know, because now I don't have to worry about it anymore.
See, so this is one of the things that happens to people who decide not to get tested and they have it in their family. And we just had somebody come in and speak to us. It was a couple months ago. And she lived her whole life up until age 50. Thinking she was going to die.
Really?
And her kids also thought she had it. And the way they sorted it out was her husband used to watch her fall asleep, and she used to jerk when she would fall asleep.
Yeah.
And so that's how they decided she had
the Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So they lived their whole lives, and their daughters lived their whole lives like they had the gene. She finally got tested. didn't have it.
Yeah. And you so, know, and that's what I thought was going to happen. That's why I just said, let me get it out of the way, you know.
I think I'd rather not know.
But, you know, still, they said with the gene, it still doesn't mean you're going to have it. You just have a chance of getting
it. Yeah, but then
their
whole life, even knowing you have a chance, it just changes everything. I just don't know if I, like, my breast cancer runs in my family, and the doctors told me I was eligible to get tested for the gene, and I had my appointment set up. I just didn't end up going. I was like, I can't, because then for the rest of my life, I'll just be waiting to have breast cancer.
Well, yeah.
You know, I'd rather just not know.
Right, so 23andMe also tests for breast cancer well, so you'd get that information.
Yeah, right. It's worth it. Do it, you know?
No, if because not, they have your DNA for the rest of their
so
life.
So then just do your ancestry.
Then
you
someone
know
breaks into their
from.
Lab and then murder someone and implants your DNA and you're in jail
right,
for the rest of
right,
your life. I'm
right.
all set.
Yeah, of course, that's going to happen anytime.
Yeah, for sure.
Anytime. No, you definitely. Just do it and it'll happen.
Have you ever seen that movie with Harrison Ford, The Fugitive? That's basically
yes.
what happened in that movie.
Yeah.
They stole like DNA from a lab and set him up for murder. I was like, bitch, that's not happening to me when I try to figure out who my ancestry is. I don't care.
Nobody's going to do it. Relax, please, okay? Anyway, so Mark, you got into, what did you take in school? How did you end up in science?
Yeah, so I wound up, I have a BS in chemistry.
Oh, really?
Pennsylvania State University, and then I have a PhD in something called pharmaceutical chemistry.
Wow.
And so,
you could be a pharmacist?
No, I can't, actually. Oh. So that's a different degree.
Okay.
My degree's for people who want to do research.
Oh, okay.
So my wife actually has a pharmacy degree, so she could if she wanted to.
Right.
She's a big pharmaceutical executive.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, so I wanted to go into research.
Right. So what made you decide to research this? Is Huntington's in your family? Are you scared that you have the disease?
No, I worked for a big biotech. I've worked for big companies my whole life.
Right.
And so I worked for a big biotech company here in California for 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I got an opportunity to take something called early retirement.
Really?
Yeah. And, wow. And that happens when they're trying to
get rid of you.
Get out their workforce.
Yeah.
And they're like, you know, there's a chance you could lose your job, but if you want to step forward, we'll give you a little bit more money.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's not.
Why not? Then you can always get another job.
It's
you know?
Not live for the rest of your life without
yeah.
money
right.
by any means, but it's enough to make you go, I wonder if I could do something different.
Yeah.
Right.
And actually, there's a long story to this. I'm a writer.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, what I want to do is I want to write.
Right.
And it took me, and I owe my old company so much for this, because once I told them that I was leaving, I had 3 months maybe where they were just like, you know, you can come in, do what you want, but you know, we're taking everything away from you because you're not going to be an employee soon.
Right.
And so I was going home and hanging out writing, which was my dream.
Right.
And it took
so
me,
you just went to work and just sat there for 8 hours?
Yeah. And it took me I didn't actually. They said you could just go home. I'd go in maybe for lunch or whatever, and you know, for some important things.
Right.
But I learned what it was like to sit home alone in your house all day,
right?
Not doing anything except sitting at your computer,
right?
Yeah. And I was miserable.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. People don't understand that they want to work at home and they're miserable.
Yeah.
People always
depressed.
They always look at that guy down the hall and they say, "Oh, that guy's so lucky because he's not doing anything."
Right.
That guy. That's a living hell.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Living hell when nobody cares where you are, and making,
yeah.
So I think life's about making a contribution, but it's also about people.
It is, and going through the motions too. I mean, you know, getting up in the morning, going to work, driving to work, being with people, doing different things, learning different things. I think beats just sitting at home alone and typing all day.
I don't know.
There's only so many.
Listen, it's something you would like for a little bit, but I'm telling you,
I used to sell insurance from home for like 2 years, and I loved it. I was
really?
In my pajamas, like, hey.
Oh, okay. I guess I made a generalization,
but
a gross one.
You can't get distracted really easily.
Yeah.
As long as you're making money,
No, see, that's it. That's not the case for me.
Yeah.
The money was kind of coming. Again, this isn't like rich money, but it's
right.
enough to, you're like, well, I'm still making a salary. And,
right.
You know,
right.
So I'm getting paid. You can only say so much to the dog.
Right.
Really. So the story, what happened is I said, look, I'm going to go back to work, and I want to do something that's a little bit different,
mm-hmm.
Something that where I could make an impact. Because when you're part of a big company, you're kind of a specialized,
right?
You know, and you're not really sure exactly, you know, the product in the end, how you've contributed, and it's not that same feeling. This is kind of right there. It's talking with the actual patients. it's being in charge of hiring people to do the research,
right,
evaluating the research. And I've had a lot of interaction now with Huntington's patients, and I never had that interaction when I was working for, you know, the big drug.
Yeah, yeah. So you always progress in life. You know, you got to be open, and maybe that was like, you know, a good sign for you to actually move on to something else, you know. And you did, you know. So how did you get into, so you said you were a writer, right? How did you get into that?
Well, I was, I remember when I first started, I've always wanted to write. You know, mm-hmm. They say everybody has a book in them.
That's right? True.
But I was sitting in a hotel room on a business trip, and I had just gone through something about, it was another layoff activity. Because right. This always happens in big companies. They're always trying to thin the workforce. And they're like, okay, you know, we're going to lay a bunch of people off. You know, your name might come up.
Right.
And I'm sitting on the plane and I'm like, you know, I'm tired of this.
Right.
I'm tired of always being in a position where...
You could get laid off.
Yeah, you could get laid off and then you don't have anything. And I said, you know, darn it, I'm gonna write a book.
Right.
And so I sat in this hotel room that night and I started writing the first chapter in Journeyman. The first book.
That's your first book?
Yeah, it's the first book in the Matt Miller and the Colony series.
That's cool, and we're going to get to that. So what was the first thing? Was this the first thing then that you wrote, the Journeyman?
I had started and stopped a bunch of things.
Okay.
And, you know, as a scientist, you write a lot of scientific books.
Right.
And so I've written articles and science books, but it's not like this.
Not so, fiction or, yeah. So this is like the world that you created.
Yes.
In your books and stuff. And that sounds fascinating to me, and we'll get to it in just a moment. But, so Matt Miller and the Colonies, that's the name of the series that you started, and you've already had... published two books, right?
Yes.
When is the third one coming, just so we have an idea?
Well, the first book is A Journeyman. The second book is Prophet.
Right.
And then the third book is tentatively titled Virginian. And I think it's about to go to the editor, in the next couple of
months.
How
exciting. So you obviously have more than one book in you.
Yes.
Right?
And wait, how long does it take you to write each book? Because you're already on the third. That's...
Well,
it's impressive.
So I've taken breaks in between for a while. I write screenplays as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got distracted for a little bit with the screenplays. And so I have some screenplays floating around L.A. One that won a contest earlier this year.
Very nice.
So I'm
congratulations.
Still waiting for something like that to happen. So how long does it take? It's hard to tell.
Right.
It's hard to tell, but it could take... The first book took probably 2 years.
Okay.
All said and done.
And it's not doing it every day all the time.
Right.
That's what you're trying to say, right?
Well,
there's a lot of research involved and all that stuff.
Like, do you have to like drink a whole bottle of Jack or smoke some weed? Like, I always wonder just how like somebody can write a fiction book, honestly.
Well, it just depends on your mood, because there was a while there when I could only write when I was drinking.
Right.
And so I would sit in front of the computer and I'd make whatever, a martini.
Right.
It was martinis. And then it was wine. Then it was, lately it's been scotch.
Right.
But now I find that I do my best writing when I get up in the morning. After a cup of coffee, because it's quiet.
Right.
And I think maybe just because my schedule's changed.
Yeah.
I get up early now to drive into L.A.
Yeah. That's true.
Right.
Do you still do work as a scientist right now?
Yes.
Did you devote? Okay,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, he still works at the company for the Huntington's disease.
No, that's right. But right. So you still do that.
To write, I need ideas. And I do get a lot of ideas during the day. And then my commute's fairly long.
Really?
And so I'll be thinking of book ideas. And you get stuck a lot of times. You're like, oh, I'm not sure where this character has to get out of this one.
Right.
And then sitting in L.A. traffic, it's a great way to slow out your book plot.
Right.
Yeah, well, I guess so, you know. You see how you make your time productive on the road.
Right.
Awesome. So, okay, cool. So now I want to understand, how did the idea come about? I mean, you said you wrote the first chapter in a hotel. You didn't really plan much before that. Did you have the whole plot in your head?
No, I didn't. There are people that plan things out. I think... Maybe for the first book I did, because a lot of times I would sit there and I would like sit in Starbucks and write, and it just seemed like it was flowing out. And so the first book, yes, and I think I had that in my mind for a long time. So Matt Miller in the Colonies is a series about a 26-year-old scientist who, a modern day scientist, who gets trapped in a reactor accident, and he winds up going through a wormhole, and he wakes up in 1762 in Colonial Virginia.
Really? Wow.
He wakes up on a horse farm, and he doesn't know where and when he is. Takes him a few days to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of learns that he doesn't really have any marketable skills, right?
Yeah, if you come from the future, right?
Yeah, he works on, and there's a reason I'm telling you this, because then we'll get to your question.
Okay.
He works on the horse farm that he wakes up on.
I would love to do that.
Farming.
Mm-hmm.
And then he meets the beautiful farmer's daughter.
Ah.
And his life changes right at that point.
But then he's going to have to go back without her.
He may or may not have to go back.
Yeah, you don't know. You don't know.
Okay, and so
but it's a time travel story, and yeah. I love those.
Yeah, you do always talk about time travel.
I do?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
People love. Yeah. Evidently, people still love time travel. After
yeah.
They had a show
because I think it's a fantasy. Like, what would I do at a different time, you
right.
know? If I could go back in time and stuff. So
I would not want to.
It fulfills a human need, right?
Yeah.
You want to do two things in your life. You want to fix some of the mistakes you made in the past.
But don't you think if we fix the mistakes we made in the past, we wouldn't be who we are, and then everything would change? Like, have you seen Butterfly Effect?
Well I have, right?
Yeah.
So that's the kind of the
it's like
the
almost his life got just got worse every right. single time he tried to fix a mistake. I'm like, oh my God, this movie is so frustrating.
But what we also want to do, okay, that's a good argument for that, I think.
Right.
So, but what we also want to do is prepare for the future.
Right.
Right.
So don't we want to know a little bit of the future
no.
so that we get no.
yeah.
I do. Maybe that's the scientist.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. Have you read the book Homo Deus? The like Sapiens and Homo Deus. That one is about like man God, and it's nonfiction, but he's talking about the future and where we might be going and stuff. And everything I read sounds scary to me. I don't know. Everything sounds like, my God, the world is really going to change, you know, 50 years, whatever. I'm not even talking about 1,000 years from now.
Yeah.
You know, which is hard to understand. But yeah, I guess some of the future would be cool, you know, like Back to the Future and stuff. And they were going into the future and that, but they made it. You know, that was a more innocent world, you know. I don't think they pictured, like, artificial intelligence so much and so many advances in science that, you know, now seems scary, where back then they couldn't even think of them.
Well, what do I want to say about that? Don't write people off that came before us as being unintelligent.
You know, no, that's not what I'm saying.
They were worried about the same things, and that's my point.
Oh, okay.
We think that they were so simple, but these are people who figured out with nothing that the calendar was 365
right.
days. They charted the stars. They,
right.
You know, all these amazing things. They were just as worried.
Right.
Right? So think about the Industrial Revolution in the 1700s. Right. Everybody was worried, oh, you know, the world's changing. All our jobs are going to be taken away because these machines... and then when I grew up, what was it? It was robotics.
Right.
Robotics was going to steal everyone's jobs, and everybody's worried about that. Now it's artificial intelligence.
Right.
Well, robots never came through, though.
No, they didn't.
Like, they never popped off. It's, like, it
yeah.
just was like a thing that every movie had robots, but no, not like any, like our real lives, there's not really.
Right, but we have robots that just don't look like people.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know,
anything
that's
one.
Automatic. Why? I mean, some of the things you use are robots, right? In your
no, but
everyday
I mean, like,
life, like your phone.
I mean, like, have you seen the movie iRobot? Like, that's what I thought robots would be.
Well, yeah.
Like,
right.
you'd be in your kitchen and the robot's just like, your breakfast is ready.
Well, it might still happen, but I mean, now we already have this. I have a grill that tells me my thing is ready. I could choose whatever.
It's not the same, though.
Why?
Robots is like, when I think of robots, I think of like a
human looking thing.
Yeah.
Right,
not
but
like,
that's what I'm saying.
Not like a microwave that knows how to cook filet mignon.
Well, we're worried about artificial intelligence now taking our jobs.
Yeah.
Have you heard this?
Yeah.
And it's,
yeah, but then how would the world survive, you know? Like, how would any of us even have homes?
We're designed to deal with every one of these things.
Right, and we adapt, right?
Evolution has designed us to be in a little bit in chaos and a little bit in order, mm-hmm. and we kind of sort it all out, don't we?
Right.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so I'm not worried anymore about artificial intelligence stealing all our jobs.
I yeah,
it's a
yeah.
lot harder than we all think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing, but, you know, just to digress again, but this book, Sapiens, I was just talking about, okay, mm-hmm. that's like about the history of man, how we get to today, right? And he says really the one of the unique things, or maybe the most unique things that we have as humans, as opposed to other living things, is fiction. That we're able to imagine things that don't really exist, you know? And they're saying other living things can do that, you know? So everybody's always trying to figure out what's different between humans and animals and stuff, but that definitely makes sense to me, you know?
Well, they call that the archetype, right?
It's
we interpret the world based on our stories.
Right.
Right? It's how we frame everything.
Right. Like if we were on an island, we wouldn't have thought of spaceships and things like that, right? Yeah.
And that's human. I think that's human consciousness, right? Because you have your frame, and you see the world, and you place the world into your interpretation,
right?
And that's, you know, that's the turmoil of our society.
Yeah. Right.
We all have a different frame,
right?
That's, but then it's like, how do we know that stories are true? Because if you have a story and you start telling that story, then someone else tells that story just a little bit different. Like literally, I've told the story, and then by the time it got to, like, get my sister, I'm like, that's not even what I said.
Well, that's why they write things down in history, right. You know? So, yeah, but what I wanted to ask, okay, so let's go back to this story. Now, is he a scientist in today's world?
So he's a modern scientist.
So he's a scientist. He ends up in that machine or whatever, right? And is that a machine?
So he gets caught in a reactor accident.
Okay.
So I based it on a theory that Einstein had.
Okay.
So I wanted that to be plausible as well.
But wouldn't it be like, wouldn't he die from radiation and stuff? I mean, from an accident?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Maybe he's dead the whole time and he's just dreaming.
Well, don't give it away.
I haven't even read it.
No, I know. I know, but that's what I was thinking too, you know? You give it away by evading the answer.
That's what I would think would happen.
Yeah, but that's the point. I mean, it's like, well, if it goes on for three books, I'm sure there's a lot to tell in between.
There are some negative effects, and the scientists who do cause the accident debate the effects as part of the book.
And the scientists that caused the accident, was it intentional or an accident?
It was an accident.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You just can't trust anyone these days. You know?
That's true, yeah. Maybe terrorists or something, but yeah. There's an idea for another story.
Yeah.
So the name of the hero is Matt Miller, right?
Yes.
Matt Miller.
It's Matt Miller.
Right. And
hero.
He is the hero.
Yeah,
okay,
he's the hero.
He's like,
of the book.
So he saves the day at some point in this book.
Well, it's his journey.
Yeah.
Right.
And so your hero is engaging with the world, right? Mm. He's taking on challenges. This is the hero's journey.
Right.
So
how did your mind go into all these places? I mean, were you like sort of like progressing with the book? Or did you already know how it was going to end?
Well, I started off, this has always been in my mind, even as I was like a smart kid. I was like one of those kids they take out of class. And I.
Why? Because you were too smart?
Got a chance to, someplace else.
Right.
And I used to think a lot about things. And what used to really bother me is that I'd look around and I was like, I don't understand how half the stuff that's here works. And think about this. Every day we turn the faucet on and the water comes out.
Right.
I don't really know how the water gets
right.
there. It's clean.
I think about that too.
We plug our phones in and the electricity comes.
Right.
And I'm a scientist. I'm supposed to know how that electricity
right.
works.
Right.
I really don't.
Yeah.
Okay. And so then I wanted to take somebody who was educated
right.
and put them in a situation where they were someplace where it was different and mm-hmm. they had to bring what they knew to that new place.
Right.
You know, so could he make electricity? Could he, you know, I'll let this out. He actually arrives in 1762 with his phone in his hand.
Oh, wow.
And he's looking at it and he's like, well, what do I do with this?
Right. Exactly.
You know, I don't know how it works.
Right.
I can't reproduce it.
Right.
And so I wanted him to put in that situation, and I was a big fan of American history.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in awe of what we've done.
Wow,
you know, we have a long
amazing.
Way to go.
Yeah.
But really,
this is the ideal.
Have,
yeah.
Right. It has the potential.
Right.
And so I'm in awe of that, and I've always been a student of American history. And so I thought, well, you know, I know these two things. I know science.
Put them together.
Let's put them. And then I enjoyed kind of just going back and because what you do is you rationalize things as you build the world.
Right.
You do more research and you find cool stuff that you didn't know.
Right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been fun.
Yeah. Very nice, man. I mean, you're really blessed, you know, and because I don't know. I mean, I'd love to be able to write a fiction book, but it seems like so insurmountable to me. But I'm sure there's ways to break it down into smaller pieces where you can actually make it happen.
Well, you can write like a short one.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Like a 100-page book.
I'd rather read than produce a story.
Right.
Yeah, whatever.
Well, that's okay, right?
Yeah, right.
It does take a long time.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of sitting and a lot of, yeah.
Yeah.
And even when you finally have it done, it's still not done.
Yeah.
You still have
I just feel like it's like in this day and age, it's really hard to like sit down and actually like focus on it when there's like TV and your phone and like just so many distractions. Like, honestly, there's just so many distractions.
Right, right. But like some people are meant to do it, some are not. Right. You know, I mean, it's with your personality as well. So he goes to the colonial America, and so he ends up in Virginia, you said? Where he starts off.
Colonial Virginia.
Right, and where, like in present day, where is he located?
So he starts off in Philadelphia.
Oh, in Philadelphia, okay, yes. Cool.
And so that was something, I had lived in Philadelphia, and so I knew a little bit about Philadelphia as
right.
well.
Yeah, right,
And so I wanted, and also Philadelphia was the largest city in colonial America, and so that was kind of the center of government and the center of society.
Oh.
And so I wanted some place for him to maybe want to go back to.
Right, right, right. That's connected with the history yes. and everything. Wow.
That's cool.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'd love to talk about the whole book, but I see you're sort of hesitant giving away the plot, which I understand, you know. Now, you probably have like twists and stuff because in a genre like this, a lot of things can happen that you don't expect, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So part of it is him interacting with colonial society
right.
as well, because he has the modern perspective,
right.
Which I think I have as well. And so I kind of built that into him. And I wanted him to be interested and fascinated with colonial society.
Right. When he showed up in this new time zone, was he wearing like an outfit from 2018? Or?
Well, he was wearing hiking clothes.
Yeah, okay.
And so he shows up with hiking clothes, and they start looking at him, and he has to make all sorts of excuses.
Yeah.
It is fortunate that he has Made in China labels uh-huh. on his clothes, because he can say, well, I got this clothing in the Orient.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what he says. And,
right.
And so they're like, oh, that's why it's so strange looking. And so there's kind of things like that happen, and,
right.
and it should be realistic as he moves through. And as I said, there has to be, he eventually becomes, and I'll let this out, he eventually becomes attracted to colonial society
right.
for a few reasons.
Right, right. I can imagine, you know, I mean, you go back in time and you go, wow, I'd just as soon stay here, you know.
Right.
It's a lot simpler life. And I like, you know, I mean, imagine you fall in love with a farmer's daughter. Why would you want to go back? You know, I mean, it's the ideal, you know.
You know, there's Paris and Paris Hilton and Nicole Richie used to do that show, and they had to do jobs.
Yeah, real life or something.
Yeah, and they would like take their phone away and like have to work on farms. I literally wonder what I would do if I was put in a situation where I was like, hey, you have no cell phone, like no electricity, like you just gotta like live. I'd probably
you'd adapt. I think you'd adapt just like everybody else does. What would you do?
You know?
You sit there and cry, no, I want my phone back.
Probably for like the first couple of days for sure. And then I get used to it.
But it's really cool. I mean, I just, this brings back all the time travel books I've read over the years, and I would imagine you've had a good experience with some of the books too, because you obviously made time travel the key to the story.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's. I think when I first started writing it, I thought, well, you know, it's another time travel book. Who's going to want to read that? But there's such an audience for time travel.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. If you like one or two, you'd love all of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes people wish they could have experienced stuff we have read in history books. You know?
Yeah, you know, and especially when you're at this time going back, you know? It's not like you were born there in that world and all that. You're coming from a place so advanced. I mean, people can view you like a god or something, you know, because you already know all these things. And you go back, then they're like, wait a minute, you know, what's going on?
Well, but I wanted to explore that. And what you'll find in the book is they don't view him like a god because he doesn't really have any skills. And
But he has knowledge, though.
Well, he has it, but he can't.
But it's useless.
He knows the future for them, you know?
What they want him to do is they want him to go out in the field and bring the hay in, and he has no idea how to do it.
Yeah.
And he's sore, and, you know, and it's all these kinds of things.
Wow.
He's not a blacksmith. He's not
a
silversmith. He's a modern day scientist.
They
don't have any skills for 17.
Right.
That's true. I still would mind if I fell in love with a farmer's daughter. Forget about all the skills. I don't care.
Well, see, he gets fascinated with that as well.
Yeah.
This is one. This has been one of the surprises, actually, in people's reaction to the book, because I wanted him to not be happy with his life in Philadelphia. And I wanted him to not be happy because of dating, and I was curious whether people would find this fascinating or not, that he goes back into colonial society and he goes into this very formal dating relationship culture
where you
have to ask a woman's family to see her. He starts to like it. And he misses, actually, this kind of tradition.
And,
you know, he dated a beautiful woman in Philadelphia, but never met her family. And, you know, she was in and out of his life. And suddenly, like, there's all this commitment going on. And I've noticed that people I wouldn't expect are like, you know, I kind of wish I had that in my life.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I guess, like, asking a woman out on a date with a text message isn't the same thing.
Yeah. No, it's not.
People are like, oh,
it's a far cry from
that. And people, mothers are like, I wish my, you know, daughters would have this going on. And then the other thing was community. You know, because I still, after 6 years of living in my house, I still don't know my neighbors on the left-hand side.
Yeah, that's true.
That's wild.
And that's, I don't know if it's a, you know, just me or if it's a...
No, it's a modern day thing.
Yeah, I would say that I don't know anyone in my apartment building. I've been there for a year. I literally don't know anybody in my apartment building.
Yeah, mine, it's always high by, you know, if I run into anybody. Yeah.
If that.
But that's the thing. Yeah.
Well, the mailman came, the UPS guy said, I have a delivery for Sam Smith. I don't know. He's like, well, did they live over there?
Yeah.
And you couldn't even tell them, right?
I'm like, no, but I know that, you know, that Joe lives over there. You know, that's not him. And he's like, what? You don't know your neighbor?
Right.
So I'm being scolded by the UPS guy, right?
Yeah.
And he's right. I don't know my neighbor. I say hi to him all the time, but we've never had a
conversation,
a real discussion.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's time you took a step.
Maybe have like a block party. Throw a block party. Seriously.
So either way.
Look, you can go to him one time when you see him. Go, listen. We've known each other for a long time. We're neighbors.
Now you guys are making me feel bad. So.
No. I don't know that I would do it, but I'm giving you advice.
You're right. I got to go. But he's not made any effort either to come over. So
right.
Just assume like he's happy with the relationship as it is right now. Right.
So. Right. But maybe he's shy and you're not even thinking in that direction.
You're exactly right.
So that's why they
didn't have that in colonial America.
Right.
You have to know your whole community.
Right.
And then people, you know, maybe people feel too crowded because everybody knows what you're doing, you know. And stuff like that, you know. You can't go cheating and stuff like that. Not that I would recommend it, but what I'm saying is there's a lot of things you don't know. You know, everybody knows what you do. You know.
Yeah, it's funny.
I guess if we look at the Amish of today, it's pretty close to that, right? I mean, do they still have the same traditions as colonial America?
I don't know. I used to live in Pennsylvania, right?
Yeah.
It's been 30 years since I've been there. But I'm not saying that he wants to live like the Amish, but he at least wants more of a connection with the community.
Right.
So.
Yeah, the Amish doesn't, like, I just don't. Remember that show, Breaking Amish? I was like, is this scripted or do people really, is this like a real thing? Like, is this really
probably
happening?
A real thing, yeah.
So crazy to me. I'd be like, I'm not doing
this.
Have
you seen the movie Witness?
No.
You've never seen Witness?
I've seen every movie.
That's the one with the Kelly, I forgot her last name. Do you remember?
Is it super
something
old?
Like that. It is super old.
Like in the 80s, like when I was just being born.
Yeah, yeah. And she was really a famous, she was an attorney.
Yeah.
And there was a kid that was witness to murder or
and
whatever.
And he was Amish?
Yeah, he was Amish. So.
Yeah.
So that's when
they have to use a candlelight, right? They don't believe in electricity.
Yeah, electricity and stuff like that. So they live really like during colonial times, you know? And that's why I was asking.
They wear those really creepy outfits, right?
It doesn't look like much fun.
Yeah,
no.
It
no.
So. But let me ask you this. So you actually had to research that period quite a bit, right? To know how people lived at the time.
Yeah, so I've... over the last couple of years, I've made a point of trying to go to places where there's history.
Right.
I've always loved Washington, D.C., so I've spent days in the Smithsonian.
Really?
Looking, wow. Like, taking pictures. I was actually in Ben Franklin's home 2 months ago in London.
Really?
So I made a point. Yeah, I arrived in London. It was for a business trip, and I got off the plane. And ordinarily, we'd get on the train and go north. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna take this opportunity because I learned that Ben Franklin's house, the one he lived in,
before he moved, before
he
moved
spent a
to
lot
the
of
States.
Time in London.
Oh, I
he
see.
He was in
okay.
London for a lot of time, and I think he was in the ambassador, but I can't remember if that's the case or not. But he was at least a U.S. representative to London, and he was Postmaster General. And what he'd do is he loved London, and he'd spend a lot of his time there. And so he had a home, right. And they've gotten the home and they've restored it. And so I walked through Ben Franklin's house, and I promised the guy that if I had the opportunity, I'd give a plug for it. It's it's on Craven
Go
Street,
ahead.
Because it turns out.
Does he charge people to go inside?
It was like £6, I think.
Is that like what's £6?
$9.
Oh, really? Wait, does he like? Did he buy it? He lives there?
No. They were the Ben Franklin Society restored it.
Oh, okay.
So it's like four stories.
They don't even.
So you can walk through it, and he tells you all the history of it. And so that's kind of cool.
Right. Yeah,
you're like, I'm walking on the same steps as Ben Franklin.
Ben Franklin.
Right. Heard these same creaks.
And right.
So stuff like that. Colonial Williamsburg is really cool if you ever go to that.
Really?
So
very nice.
You know,
man,
that makes me think about like when I was in like middle school, they used to take us on field trips to like colonial houses or something where somewhere someone from history used to live. And just when you would walk through, you'd be like, I can't even imagine living like this. But the houses like are still look exactly the same. They change nothing. They don't like restore them or anything. Because I lived in this town, North Andover, and there's a lot of like famous people that used to live there. I don't know why, but it's a nice town. But it's just like when you walk through it, it's like I can't imagine like small stairways. Like they use like half burnt candles still like in like a window where they obviously have a glass so no one steals it. But I'm just like, that's crazy.
Yeah.
They don't have any of that. Like, what are they going to do for our kids?
Right.
Where are they going to go?
Well, that's why we should read this book, because it'll give you a better feeling for what it was like.
Come to Donald Trump's mansion like 50 years from now and he's dead. It's going to be completely different.
So in the last few minutes, so you wrote, book one is Journeyman. Mm-hmm. What's the second one? Prophet?
Prophet.
Yeah, so, again, the series is Matt Miller and the Colonies.
Right.
And then the first book is Journeyman. The second book is Prophet, and they're available on Amazon.com. You can also get to them through Goodreads.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third book is going to tentatively be called Virginian, and that should be coming out. I'm also right now in the studio working on an audiobooks for both.
Oh.
We just almost finished Journeyman in the studio, and then Prophet, we're just starting on it now. So it's people like audiobooks now as well, and I think it has to do with what you said about, you know, being distracted.
Yeah.
Right.
So at least you can put this on your phone.
Right.
And listen
right.
to it while you're doing something else.
Right.
People have actually tweeted me to do audiobooks. I'm like, to talk about what?
Well, you know what? The thing is, I tell you what the problem with me is with audiobooks is I get distracted when I'm listening.
Yeah, same. I think I would,
right? Because you're driving, you're like not really paying attention.
Yeah.
So,
or you put it on and you're cleaning, and then all of a sudden you're like in the bathroom and you just missed the last paragraph, so now you're confused.
Right.
You don't know what's going on.
So some nonfiction you can do, but still I realize I miss half of it, you know? It only works when, like it worked for me when I went to Arizona and you're like in the desert and there's nothing else to do, then you're paying attention. But a lot of people maybe are too lazy to read, don't have time, whatever. The audiobook goes faster, maybe. You know?
Audiobooks would be really good if they were available on, like, Apple Music. Because if I was, like, on a beach or something and I plugged my phone in.
You can get it on your phone.
Yeah, they are on Apple.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, then I would totally do that.
Yeah.
If I was, like, laying out or something, I would definitely rather somebody be reading it to me than holding a book, getting sand in it.
Well, that's you, you see.
Yeah.
I'll take the book any day, my dear.
Well, that's because you love the smell and the touch of it.
And everything, and the touch of it and everything. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking forward to reading this, I got to tell you, Mark, because it's right up my alley. I love stuff like this. And I thank you for writing it. There's so many more questions I wanted to ask you, but we're totally out of time. So we'll invite you back. You're welcome to come back anytime.
Well, thank you so much for having me. You have a beautiful studio.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it.
Of course.
Desiree, thank you.
Desiree, thank you. And tell people again who you are.
You guys are welcome. I'm Desiree Duffy. I do PR marketing for wonderful authors like Mark. And
there you go. So if you have an idea for a book, you want to write a book, Desiree is the person to go to.
Sure thing.
She knows the whole thing, the whole shebang. All right. Well, have a great weekend, Mark. And you too, Desiree. Thank you so much. Danny, thank you so much.
You are so
welcome. Another great week. And we'll see everybody here on Monday.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Danny, only on LA Talk Radio.